hearing is subdivision 2022-19, Gray Rock Preserve.
This is a cluster subdivision to divide 47.48 acres plus or minus into 94 single-family lots to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Georgetown 100, Sussex County. The property is lying on the northwest side of Wilson Road, which is Sussex County Rep 244, approximately 0.88 mile west of Sandhill Road, which is Sussex County Rep 319. The 911 address is not available. The tax parcel ID is District 135, Map 10, Parcel 10.00. The zoning district is AR1, Agricultural Residential Zoning District. Submitted into the record, Mr. Chairman, we have a copy of the applicant's preliminary subdivision plan. We have a copy of the applicant's exhibit booklet. We have a copy of a letter received from the Sussex County Engineering Department, Utility Planning Division. We have a copy of the staff review letter. We have a copy of the property deed. We have a copy of the PLOS review comments. We also have a copy of the DelDOT service level evaluation response. We also have a copy of the applicant's Chapter 99-9C response. We have a copy of technical advisory committee comments from Delaware Division of Historic and Cultural Affairs. We have DENREC Drainage Program, Delaware Fire Marshal's Office, Delaware Electric Co-op, and a letter received from Artesian Resources. And I would note we have received zero comments. Thank you.
All right, sir. We thank you. And the chair recognizes Mr. Hutt.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chairman Wheatley, members of the Planning Commission, staff, and Mr. Robertson. For the record, my name is David Hutt. I'm a local attorney here in Georgetown with the law firm of Morris James. This afternoon, I am representing Grayway Developers, LLC, which is the applicant for the subdivision that was just described by Mr. Whitehouse. With me this afternoon, to my left when I was sitting down, you were right at the moment, is Kasia Kalinski, a senior landscape designer with George Miles and Buehr. I believe as I'm speaking, I will be joined by one of the principals of Grayway Developers, Webb Gray. I believe he is stuck in traffic, and I believe that, unless he's here, Mr. Boyce will also be joining us from Century Engineering. I think the Planning Commission got through its other business and old business a little faster than perhaps it was initially anticipated. The property we are here on this afternoon is located just off of Wilson Road, a little less than a mile from its intersection with Sandhill Road, and looking at the images on the screens around the room, Sandhill Road runs from the top to bottom of the screens, and Wilson Road runs through here. And the site that we are specifically talking about is right underneath the cursor at the moment. As you can see by looking at this aerial imagery, this is a rural and residential area of Sussex County. There are a number of single-family lots, as you can see, based on the tax map. And of course, within that, there are also agricultural lands, forest lands, as well as several other subdivisions and communities. Several of those communities are highlighted and identified on that aerial imagery, including Iron Hook Harbor, which the Planning Commission will remember as that was just approved approximately 2 months ago and is directly across the street on Wilson Road. Just below Iron Hook Harbor is Sandhill Acres, which is a manufactured home community with 10,000 square foot lots. And there's actually a potential expansion area when you look at the tax maps for that property. As you move out from being right across the street from the property, there are County Seat Gardens, the Vines of Sand Hill, Reddenwood, Bridalwood, the estates at Carriage Springs, the estates of Enchanted Woods, and others as you broaden the diameter of that circle as it extends out from this property. Of course, there are two other significant landmarks that help to identify the location of this property. One is that lies between this property and Sandhill Road. I will put the cursor on it, but that is the present location of the elementary school for Sussex Academy, which was the school formerly known as the Jefferson School in Sussex County. And of course, the other feature on this aerial imagery that you can see is, of course, the Redden Forest is to the north and west of this site. Almost all of the forest land that you see on the screen is part of the Redden Forest. As introduced by Mr. Whitehouse a moment ago, this application is comprised of one tax parcel consisting of approximately 47 and a half acres of land. The property is designated on the county's future future land use map as being within a low-density area. The areas on the north side of Wilson Road are shown on the tax map as being within a low-density area. As you may recall from Iron Hook Harbor, on the south side of Wilson Road, those properties are all identified as being in the county's developing area, one of the county's seven growth areas. Similarly to how the future land use map is aligned, this is a zoning map with the aerial imagery as part of it. Of course, this is the proposed project this afternoon. And as you can see, since there is no coloring of those areas, that is, of course, AR1. The color that's below that is the county's GR, or General Residential District. And again, that coincides with the developing area that exists on the future land use map. As you can see on this aerial imagery here, even though the proposed lots are shown on it, the property is unimproved. Approximately 40 and a half acres of the site are wooded. As you can see, there's a line basically that cuts across the property at this point here, and everything to the rear of that line is wooded. And in the remainder of the property, or the front of the property, if you were looking at it from Wilson Road, is used for agricultural purposes. The cluster subdivision tool was available for this property because both central water and central sewer are available through artesian resources. The subdivision plan that we will look at in just a moment demonstrates how the cluster subdivision tool allowed for superior design for this proposed project as compared to a standard subdivision. The image on the screens around the room right now is a rendered version of the amended subdivision plan for Gray Rock Preserve. As you can see, we'll take a quick tour of the proposed community. At the bottom of the screen is Wilson Road, and these areas over here would be part of Iron Hook Harbor in the future. You would enter into the community off of Wilson Road, and it's approximately 200, almost between 200 and 250 feet before you come to this first home here on the right as you enter the community. And there is that road, but the primary road through the community is a looped road with a stormwater management pond proposed for the middle of that residential area. And as you can see, trails connecting each of the outside ring of that loop to a path that would go around that pond. Sidewalks would be located on one side of the streets within a Gray Rock Preserve. Those sidewalks and that network of sidewalks around the perimeter would, of course, be connected to the trail network on the interior of the lots as well. In addition, as you can see underneath the location where the cursor is presently located on the screen, there is a playground amenity that is proposed in that location as a gathering area and a play area for the future residents. Configuring the site in the manner that you see on the screens around the room allowed for the preservation of almost 17 acres, 16.9 acres of the wooded areas, which is approximately 42% of the woods on the site. I'll come back to this point again in a moment, but that amount of woods preservation, the 42%, would simply not be possible if this were laid out as a standard subdivision. Each of the lots that you see on the screen, there are 94 of them, if you were to stand here and count them, each of those lots meets the 7,500 square foot minimum in an AR1 cluster subdivision. With the 94 lots proposed for the subdivision, the resulting density is 1.98 or 2 units to the acre. As the commission will recognize, this is the base density for AR1 ground that has central water and sewer available to it. Of course, that density is not only the base density, but it's consistent with the project's designation on the future land use map as being within a low density area, and is also consistent with the designation of level 4 on the state strategies map. The Because this is a cluster subdivision, there will be a 30-foot landscape buffer that surrounds the perimeter of the community, and it was identified by GMB. You can see it was shaded in as a different color here, but this darker line is intended to show the addition of where the landscape buffer will be added, because of course in the majority of the community, what will occur is the trees that are already in existence will remain, of course, unless they're a danger to persons or property. But the dark shaded areas are areas in the current agricultural field where there would be a landscape buffer added at the perimeter. There are no regulated wetlands located on the property. As I mentioned a moment ago, public utilities are available to the site. Mr. Whitehouse referenced Artesian's letter that's in the file. Artesian's letter confirms that public water is available to the site, including for fire protection. Artesian's letter also confirmed that it is prepared and ready and willing to treat the wastewater from this site and proposed project. I believe it's the last paragraph of the Artesian letter also confirms that this property is already within a CPCN for both water and wastewater uses. Two portions of the property, roughly the triangular portion up here and an area of the property down here, are located within an excellent groundwater recharge area. However, the impervious cover in those areas will be less than 35%, which is the threshold when mitigation measures are required pursuant to Chapter 89, the Source Water Protection Chapter of the County Code. There are no wellhead protection areas on the site, and there are no known historical sites or endangered species located within the property. The property is not located within a flood zone or flood plain, and there will be a property owners association created as part of this to manage and govern the common areas within the community. This property lies on the very outer edge of the Cape Henlopen School District, and if the school district so desired, the applicant would of course coordinate with the school district on the location of a bus stop. A service level evaluation request was filed with DLDOT, and DLDOT responded not only to the service level evaluation request, but also through the PLUS process, as set forth in both of those documents, the impact of this community.
Excuse me, just for a second. The plan and the plan, that plan is not the plan that's in the packet.
There was an original, if I may, there was, yeah. So don't mean to jump in, Mr. Whitehouse, but. This is the amended preliminary subdivision plan. The initial plan that was filed with the application was amended the same number of lots. And I'll actually go over some of those changes in a moment.
This is the one that we're to consider, though.
That's correct.
Which is the same. That's in, because there's a preliminary site plan, there's a revised preliminary site plan. It's in the docket. Not, I don't know if there's a color version of it, but it's.
Oh, well, there it is, revised submission. Yeah. I'm sorry, I was looking at the wrong plan. Okay. All right. Okay, I'm on the right page now.
Okay. DLDOT's response to both the service level evaluation request and the PLUS review process indicated that the traffic impact for this proposed project would be a minor impact. Pursuant to Sussex County's memorandum of understanding with DLDOT, that means that the trip generation is greater than 50 vehicle trips in a peak hour, but less than 200, and greater than 500 vehicle trips per day, but less than 2,000. In the DLDOT's development coordination manual, this means that the applicant can be afforded the option of paying an area-wide study fee in lieu of a traffic impact study. Mr. Boyce, and I'm not sure if he's, I see Mr. Gray has joined us. Mr. Boyce has not joined us yet, but Mr. Boyce did have the opportunity to conduct a pre-submittal meeting with DLDOT on July 17th, and minutes from that meeting are included in the project materials. In addition to those minutes, DLDOT supplied a memorandum dated July 24th, 2023, confirming that the option of paying the area-wide study fee was available, and basically that it essentially states that the applicant's obligations are to pay the area-wide study fee, and then, as the commission is familiar, improve Wilson Road to its functional road classification. That road classification is a minor collector, and a minor collector would have 11-foot travel lanes and should be 8-foot shoulders, but there's a design deviation to have 6-foot shoulders in this location. One bright note that came out of the those minutes, if you read them carefully, you will see that a shared use path is not being required along Wilson Road. Of course, that means that this will be a property that does not have one of those infamous paths to nowhere that begins at one end of a property and ends at the other with no connection to anything meaningful. One of the primary concerns of the PLUS report was that the majority of the site is forested, and the PLUS comments note that the site appeared to have maintained some degree of forest cover since 1937 and could be considered a mature forest, which would make it suitable habitat for rare, threatened, and endangered species. Three things were done to evaluate and address that concern that was lodged by the Office of State Planning Coordination. First, of course, is the cluster subdivision option was selected as the tool by which this property would be developed. Then that results in there being less area consumed by infrastructure and lots, leaving more area available for open space. Secondly, and this goes to the question you raised just a moment ago, Mr. Wheatley, is the site plan was modified to place more of the homes in the agricultural field area of the site and less homes in the wooded area. Specifically, the site plan that I believe you were looking at a moment ago, Mr. Wheatley, did have a loop or cul-de-sac that went in this direction into the triangular portion of the site. In reevaluating the site and redesigning it a little bit after throughout the process, those homes were removed from there and placed in this row that comes in, is on the right when you first enter the community off of Wilson Road. And again, that was done to place more of the lots in the agricultural field and preserve a greater amount of the forest area. The third thing that was done was Watershed Eco, a company which I think the commission has familiarity, was retained to perform a study of the wooded areas. And the results of that study are set forth in the project book materials. But because I don't think that that's a common occurrence, I thought I would review a little bit about how that study was conducted and the analysis that came from that study. Because Sussex County does not currently have a specific set of regulations or guidelines for forest conservation, Watershed Eco used the Newcastle County Unified Development Code Ordinance number 21-009 to conduct a forest habitat value assessment. When you look at that code, that type of an assessment can only be conducted by certain type of professionals. That list of professionals includes architects, landscape architects, foresters, arborists, botanists, or other licensed or certified professionals. The individual who conducted this study is one of those, and in fact, he is, through Maryland's process, through their Department of Natural Resources, has been a qualified forest professional since 2001. What it involves is that forest professional goes into the forest and identifies locations, fixed radius locations that are a tenth of an acre, and characterizes the forest within each of those radius of the area. And not only does the UDC in Newcastle County use that, but this is the same standard that Maryland would employ to look at a forest. Within each of those tenth of an acre sample plots, all trees that are greater than 6 inches diameter at breast height are measured, and then a list of all understory trees, tall shrubs, low shrubs, herbaceous species, and plants is also taken. Essentially, it's just an inventory of everything that lies within the radius at 1/10 of an acre. Each one of the plant species and trees is then given a coefficient of conservancy number. And that number is an established number. It was established by a Denrec botanist known as Bill McAvoy, and I may have mispronounced his name, but that's the gentleman who established that coefficiency list. Certain things, of course, are given greater weights and greater number of points. For instance, large diameter trees are given additional points based on their height and their diameter. In addition, forest interior is something that would be given additional points. For instance, a potential mature forest would be given more points if it was clear that it had been in existence since 1937. Again, the date referenced in the PLUS report. There are also what's called valued tree species, which are given additional points as well. You then take, you total all of the points for the species of trees and the ground cover and such that was in that area, and come up with a total value for each of those areas. And then there are three tiers. The first tier is Tier 1, which is an older growth, highest habitat value forest, and that's an area, that one-tenth of an acre area, that has accumulated 52 points or more. Tier 2 is what's called a mid-successional forest, and that has a point range from 26 to 51 points. And Tier 3, which is the lowest quality of forest, has that coefficient value of 1 to 25 when you add up all the points. If you looked at Mr. Tupac's report, you saw that there was four locations where that tenth of an acre was evaluated. The total habitat value point scores in those four locations were 10.14, 15.09, 17.62, and 15.5. Of course, that demonstrates that these would be in the Tier 3, the lowest quality forest that exists on that evaluation of habitat for this. And in fact, they're not even on the edge of moving to a tier two forest, rather, as they would need to be in the 20s in order to get to that level. Just to take one step further, the UD then says, based on the type of forest or tier of forest, in each zoning classification, how much preservation there has to be, X tenths of an acre of forest preservation. Of course, as you would imagine, a Tier 3 forest is a forest that doesn't garner much support. In fact, one tenth of an acre is all that's required for preservation of a Tier 3 forest. Based on the site investigation, the data calculations, the on-site forest that's on this property would not be classified as a mature or old growth forest, that Tier 1. It also would not be qualified as a Tier 2 because of the point values. And of course, that means that it is Tier 3, the lowest quality of forest that exists, which simply means that there's going to be less biodiversity and less reasons to preserve that. When I asked, I was told one of the reasons why this forest, which has remained largely as you see it since 1968, it was actually timbered in 1968, it appears from aerial imagery, but why it would not be considered a mature or old growth forest from 1968 to now is because the soils are too well drained. And so it doesn't provide an environment in which those trees and the habitat can develop into something more. And in fact, that's consistent with when you look at the properties that surround this. You can see that the properties that are around it are involved in silviculture. There is clearly crops of trees that are being grown by the state on the adjacent properties. And of course, the types of pine trees that are existent on those sites are the types of trees that like more sandy, well-drained soils. So all of that is consistent with what you see on the aerial imagery and as you drive around. Stated in its simplest terms, it appears that not all forests are created equal. There are some that have more habitat value than others. I hope with that explanation of the studies and efforts that went into analyzing the forested area on the property and minimizing the impact of this project on that wooded area, the cluster subdivision application that's in front of you is, you will agree, is the right tool for this project and a superior tool. In the written materials for the project, there was answers and responses to each of the elements in Chapter 99-9C. I'm not going to review each of those this afternoon. As you know, with respect to a cluster subdivision, the code provides That the subdivision should provide for a total environment of design which are superior to what could be achieved under a standard subdivision, and then lays out essentially a four-step process by which to accomplish that. The first step is to identify lands that should be preserved, and in this case, there is certainly are no wetlands, no waterways, no historical features, no rare, threatened, or endangered species to protect, and so the only quasi, I guess, special feature is the forested area, and as we just heard, that's a Tier 3 forest and maybe not as special as other forested areas. That means that the developable area of the project is essentially the entirety of the site, as it's shaded in green on the screens around the room. The next step is to locate roads and trails, and you can see in order to try to minimize the impact of this on the forested area. That loop road that I described at the outset was designed, and then with the trails connecting the interior portion of the loop road, and of course that area in the interior will stay forested. The last step in the process is to add the lot lines, and of course that is the 94-lot subdivision that we're here for this afternoon. The result of that process, all of that, is a clustered subdivision, which we would argue and present is a design superior to that of a standard subdivision for at least the following reasons. First, this subdivision preserves approximately 16.9 acres, or 42% of the woods, irrespective of whether they're mature or old growth. It will still preserve almost 17 acres of them. In addition, between the areas that are forested and just the general open space that's in the community, there's a total of 25.11 acres, which is approximately 53% of the site will be open space, which of course far exceeds the 30% open space requirement found in the code. Of course, the smaller lot sizes allowed for the creation of those large open spaces and the creation of the sidewalk and trail network to connect all of the lots and the future residents and the play area. The existing topography of the site was utilized so that mass grading would be minimized. Again, the goal is to leave, as much of the forest cover as possible. And of course, the overall goal of all of that, the lot sizes, the open space, was to preserve as many trees as possible. Hopefully through the information that's in the project book and presented this afternoon, the Planning Commission will agree that this subdivision application meets the requirements found both within the comprehensive plan and the zoning code, including the requirements for a cluster subdivision. I do have a proposed set of findings and conditions, and I will hand to Mr. Whitehouse and Mr. Robertson. And with that, that concludes my presentation, and myself and the rest of the team who are here are happy to answer any questions the commission may have.
All right, sir, we thank you. We'll see if anyone on the commission has any questions. We'll start with Ms. Wingate.
Just a couple. The Artesian letter, I'm sure you're aware of this because I'm sure you probably have ongoing talks with them, but that letter is expired from January 22. Okay. I've never noticed that note at the bottom of it that it expires within 1 year. The other question I have is on the conceptual plan, so the aerial view, it looks like there's a pond or something that backs up to lots 20, 21. That area?
Right.
I see that's the same last name. I'm just wondering about safety if this gets approved with, you know, if you got a pond back there and kids wanting to wander back.
You're talking about the pond that's located right
there?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, there would be the 30-foot buffer that would be between that and that pond.
Wondering if maybe consideration to put a fence up around that pond. That's all I have.
All right. Well, thank you.
I'm a little curious about, understand the quality of the forest maybe isn't fantastic. But would it, would there be a version of this site plan where, you know, you have forested area in the middle of the development, where that could be shifted into connectivity with the rest instead of it, you know, kind of dividing the forest land up? So basically, could this have been done so that you could have more contiguous forest land for wildlife, so that they don't have to cross through yards in the public street? Just a question.
I would say that was one of the primary considerations that led to the elimination of the cul-de-sac that came off of here. I'm not a landscape architect or a designer, but I think that in order to have the necessary areas for stormwater management and such, that's how that came to be in that shape. And so technically, could it perhaps that be shortened up a little bit in some location? Perhaps. But I think that would be a difficult task. And again, with the elimination of that cul-de-sac, we felt like that did quite a bit and also left a forested area that sticks, you know, in between those two pieces that the state of Delaware has, leaving that corridor available for any wildlife.
Thank you.
Further? Okay, Mr. Butler?
I have a question. I hear about tier one, tier two, tier three forestry. So I come from a forestry family. Usually that's due to a lack of maintenance after a cutting. So my question is could we, during the subdivision, instead of putting more retention ponds, as has the water flow naturally from thinning the forest, has that ever been done? Yeah, so there'd be a more natural flow of water instead of us containing it into ponds.
The pond size will be determined. That has not been hard engineered.
I'm just wondering about more of a natural flow instead of. Who was the forester that looked at it from Maryland?
Will Tupac.
Do you know who the forester was from Maryland who looked at
Will
it?
Will Tupac.
Wilson Buck.
Will Tupac.
Okay.
TWUPAC.
Okay, yeah. Familiar with it. Very good people. My question is could we reduce some of the pond sizes by thinning the forest that's already there to have more runoff, because the drainage is not well. It's not getting enough drainage to grow the timber fast enough.
From what they told me, it's too well drained. The soils are, because there was right, borrowed so. Material. Let me move the image. This is believed to be an old borrow pit. Right. And there, if you walk the site, you'll see there's a great deal of fluctuation in height that is not typical of Sussex County, which would indicate that this soil is the type of soil that people come and take and use for projects and has been, which is the genesis of this pond area in the state's piece.
The only question I was asking is if we could get a more natural drain than digging a hole, just a more, just by thinning the timber, getting a more natural drain. That was all, no more, no less.
I will tell you that one of the designers is here, and we'll take that into consideration. I think the typical mindset is to preserve as much of that forest as possible without disturbing it, because as you noted, you know, forests are known for their filtering capabilities of stormwater, and I do not know how thinning them enhances that or not. That's beyond my ability.
Conversation. Thank you. Thank you for your answer.
Okay. Staff?
None for me, thank you.
Okay. Anyone?
None for me either. Thanks. Nope. Okay. I'm good.
All right. I actually do have a question, which is perhaps a bit more detailed and perhaps might be better answered by your landscape architect expert. As you know, there's a requirement for design superiority, and I would like for you to explain in terms of how the ordinance is written, what your specific process was here to, and how this is superior. Because you know there's a process in the ordinance, and I'm just curious to know how that was pursued.
She can walk. I mean, I can ask Ms. Kalinske to walk back through the slides that establish that. If she
just from the point of view of the how the ordinance is sort of specific about what areas are identified, what you're going to preserve, and how you kind of came up with that geometry for the subdivision.
Certainly. Please introduce yourself.
I'm Katja Kalinske, landscape designer with GMB. So applying the superior design, we identified any constraints on the site, which there are no wetlands, no forest that really needs to be preserved, no historical area. So we identified the whole site as area that we can use to be developed. So from there, we laid out the street network and the trail system and the sidewalks. We tried to leave a whole big central area open. The size of the pond that is shown on these plans has not been determined yet. And to your earlier question, if there is a possibility for infiltration, we will use that instead of having wet ponds on the site. So after we laid out the street network and the trails, we came up with the lot layout. And after looking at all the wooded areas, we did decide to eliminate that cul-de-sac that was in this triangular portion to preserve more trees and use the agricultural area for the lots. And that results in this amount of open space, which is over 50% of the site.
All right, thank you.
Just real quick before you go away, just for the record, did you look at how the site would be developed if it was a standard subdivision at 20,000 square foot lots, what it would look like? I think Mr. Hutt touched on that, but would it be entirely different?
There would pretty much be no tree left.
Clear cut it.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So that's your choice. So thank you. That's exactly what I asked for. So thank you. Appreciate that. All right, Mr. Hutt, I think we're done with the questions. If you want to take a seat nearby, we'll see if there's anyone here with an interest in your application. Okay, is there anyone here that would like to speak in favor of subdivision 2022-19 Gray Rock Preserve? Is there anyone here that would like to speak in opposition to subdivision 2022-19? Yes, sir, come on up.
Mike Sardian, I take it?
Yep.
Okay. Kyle Hoyt, State Forester for the Delaware Forest Service Department of Agriculture. I wanted to elaborate a little bit on Gray Rock and how it came to our attention. And I apologize that no plus comments were given. We had a vacancy at that moment, and this came across that what I refer to as the TAC level. So we kind of got it late in the game. Otherwise, you would have had upfront comments, much like DelDOT and Denerac. This is of particular interest to us, mainly because of where it sits. We surround it on three sides. The road is naturally the fourth. What a lot of folks don't realize is this area down through here is our property as well. And I did like the comment, not all forests are created equal, because they are not. They require a lot of attention, a lot of detail, and a lot of work. As you see with this entire area here, and if we could kind of zoom out on this real quick, if you don't mind. Perfect. This is what we refer to as the Eskridge Track. It's 210 acres. We put a lot of time into this. Ironically, the Department of Transportation's put a lot of time into this because this is not an old borrow pit. What this is actually a remediation site for 113 that the state of Delaware took ownership of after getting it from the Ockel family historically. And what we do with this property is we monitor and we improve habitat. And we have what the state endangered species, the tiger salamander, sits on this property. We actually have monitoring devices on these through Department of Fish and Wildlife. And what our overall goal was is because we did have interest in this property here was to invest that time into this parcel as well, which goes back to that all parcels are not the same, all forests are not the same. We understand development has to take place, but our stance on this is there's a better place for these 94 homes and is not put in between Redden State Forest, especially the Eskridge Track. From my standpoint, I used to manage these forests, all three forests. We have a total of 23,000 acres. Redden makes up 16,000 acres of this of the forest. This ties into essentially over 2,000 acres of consecutive forest, which is one of the largest pieces of consecutive forest in Sussex County. The unique thing about Eskridge, it is a valuable recharge area for water quality. Anybody at Denerec from water quality will speak to you about that if they were here. Because they actually do the majority of their research on this parcel. So we have a joint agreement to where they can work and essentially do what they do so we can do what we do. Our business is growing trees, growing habitat, and growing recreational opportunities for those that use our properties. One really tough thing for us is when we do have subdivisions that come up, especially like this, and this is in my wheelhouse as well as a wildland firefighter, we look at fire threat. Because we take that very serious. Delaware doesn't really have huge wildfires, but the potential is there, especially in the marshes. But what a lot of people don't realize is the pine lands throw a lot of fire around. You look at the Pine Barrens in New Jersey, what they've been experiencing. This could be one of those stories. And in order to proceed, if this were to go forward, it would change our management tactics. And essentially what this would result in, and I know the design with the cluster is meant to conserve forest, on site, it's actually going to reduce the forest on our side because we are going to cut a 35-acre swath around this property. Reason for that is due to the fire threat, it's due to the public hunting that's on there with the safety zone involved, and it's also due to essentially our timber harvest. It's to create buffers on those timber harvesting pieces. One unique piece about this whole section through here is we do not actually harvest timber in there. We will, if it gets diseased, sickened, we will go in there. But essentially, it's a research area for us. And that's why I thought it was important to come talk to everyone here today and kind of voice the department's opinion on behalf of Secretary Skew since he's out of town. Because it's important that we do, you know, relay the information of what could happen or what will happen if a development of this size goes into this area. I brought along with me Chris Miller. He's Deputy State Forester. And if you guys would afford us the time, I'd like him to kind of come up and talk a little bit about more of the research since he has taken over my past duties and has been working with Denerec, if that is okay with you all. Okay. Thank you.
Hi. My name is Chris Miller, Deputy State Forester. And I'd kind of just like to give you a little bit of background about the track with the ponds on it. So you see this S-shaped here, the two little pill ponds here, and then the larger pond here. This was all put in as tiger salamander habitat, which is an S1 tier 1 species in the state and is state endangered according to the Delaware Wildlife Action Plan that's presented from DENREC. There are several breeding pairs in these ponds. The telemetry on them we're still waiting for, and it's very likely that they are going over onto this property as well. There's plans to put another pond in this area to kind of have a wagon wheel effect from this larger pond out. We do this for the endangered species, and really tiger salamanders are one of those things that we like to kind of focus on. It's actually a very good umbrella species for water quality. They need good water recharge. In this particular site, when it's an S1 species, it means there's less than 5 occurrences of it in the state of Delaware. And that just happens to be one of those occurrences, and they're located on here. I talked with the biologist, the state herpetologist. The past 2 years, they've had failures in breeding due to low water levels in these ponds from lack of rains in the spring. It should also be noted that not this project, but if you zoom out, we own this parcel and then a parcel to the north. Both of these parcels were forest legacy areas for the federal government. That means that these were bought with federal funds, they were federally ranked, and they competed nationwide. And these areas of forest were deemed appropriate for us to get money to buy them. They were deemed important for the state of Delaware, and the state of Delaware has deemed all of these forests in this area important and valuable to us. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you folks might have about forest harvest, our timber plans in this area, because these do fall under our stewardship plans. They're all working forests. They're working forests for wildlife. They're working forests for actual timber production as one of your, a pretty large income for Sussex County landowners.
All right, thanks.
Can I ask a question just for the record? So is it the state's position that this shouldn't be developed at all or shouldn't be developed with the 94 lots or?
I can speak to that.
Just so we kind of know precisely what it is.
After talking over as a department as a whole, talking with our cabinet secretary, it is under the mindset of us that it should not be developed at all.
Was there ever any attempt to purchase it? I mean, because it just strikes me that it's sort of a donut hole there.
As I alluded to, it was a high interest to us, and the Open Space Council actually awarded funding for this property. I believe it was in 2020. We named it the Banning property to go forward with, and unfortunately, due to the appraisal value and the request from the family, the ownership, we could not essentially strike a deal on that.
Okay. Right.
But yes, it is high importance for us.
Another question, maybe. So let's say the development were to go forward. What would be things that could mitigate the impact of the development from your perspective?
Coming from the urban forestry world and dealing with a lot of plus and a lot of TAC reviews, if it did go forward, I'd have to say our department probably at least want to see a shrinking of at least half of the homes, well over half of the homes, which I know is very concerning for the folks to my left here. And the reason for that is because we would like to see a much larger buffer on this property, and the reason for that is because we manage for invasive species, and what we find is when we actually have big subdivisions like this, yard waste is the number one spreader of that for us. We see it all over all of our state forest, all 23,000 acres. They have some type of land ownership up against us. So in order to move forward, I think it would have to be a substantial reduction in home units.
So there was discussion or mention of developing a pond to help further propagate the species, right? I'm just curious if there is there opportunity for that development to happen in conjunction with anything that's happening with this subdivision? Is there any complementary work that could be done that would support the goals of them to make money with dividing this property and creating these houses that we desperately need, you know, for people to be housed in, while at the same time helping preserve the habitat and enhancing the habitat for the species?
I think that's a tough one, because right now, essentially, Gris is in negotiations with the department. Oh, go ahead.
It's a highly specialized species. Have to be quite a bit of work and quite a bit of coordination going in there. I mean, we work directly with the herpetologist, and that's where we get our marching orders from to actually implement those plans. We don't have anybody on staff to actually do that work without the Department of Fish and Wildlife to help us.
Thank you.
And if I can elaborate real quick, that loss of 35 acres is pretty vital for us in terms of habitat, not necessarily timber revenue. We understand, you know, we're willing to work with our adjacent landowners to modify what our management tactics are. We're doing it daily, depending if it's one house or two houses. But essentially the habitat in this area and where this actually sits, and when I was first contacted by the owner of this property, I jumped at it. I went to the front office with this, and then I had it on the Open Space Council agenda in no time. And the reason for that was because of the tiger salamander and the habitat, because we are one of the few areas that actually has this within the entire state. So further questions?
Okay, sir. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have one last one.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Since 1968, has there been any
Has there been any thinning of the forest, anything, or is it still as natural habitat since 1968?
No, we're constant. I understand the question as modifications go, or harvest, is that what you're asking?
Yeah, I mean, has there been any forestry done on it since 1968, or was it reestablished in pines? Did it come up in natural growth? So on and so on.
The background, well, the particular interest in Eskridge here, you know, our 210 acres here surrounding this, it was a heavy remediation site. So it had a heavy pine component, and there was also some wetland species trees in there, which DelDOT naturally purchased due to the 113 expansion that took place. So when we took ownership of this particular track, we went in there and started to replant what failed the first time, and then modified from there. The trees are roughly about 23 years old on our side, which are due for a thinning here shortly, but it's, again, gonna be dependent on this subdivision, what that looks like, and also with the tiger salamanders, it's gonna depend on what the other agency that we work with says, because we don't wanna reduce that habitat, we wanna grow that habitat for them.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Anything else, anyone? All right, okay, who's next? Yes, sir, come on up.
How you doing? William Sykes, 210-46 Wilson Road.
Yes, sir.
Georgetown. I'm here to want to find out a few things about this development.
Okay.
Can I? Okay. Where is their access, the access to this road? They sent me a letter back in February that they wanted to purchase property off of me and my neighbor.
Okay.
We both declined them. So I want to know how they're getting access into their new development off of Wilson Road.
Well, we'll show you that.
Bottom left there.
Bottom left, see
the bottom left, yes, but they're supposed to, the highway department says they're supposed to put shoulders on both sides so there's passing lanes. They cannot get any land on either side of the road, because one is estate-owned, and the other is other property-owned, and we were not giving any up.
Okay.
So that's how I can say, that's how I'm asking how they get in their access.
We'll get an answer to that question for you here, hopefully, and what else is on your mind?
And then, as the gentleman were talking about the around that, there's a lot of people that deer hunt back in this area.
Right.
Now, when you put this housing development in, they're going to go to Denrek, all these people that move in from the cities, and they're going to hear the gunfire, and now they're going to want a safety zone of 300 to 400 feet all the way around it. So that closes a lot of this Redden Forest off to people like me that lived here all my life. So that's why we're looking at we don't need these housing developments around here. I just got one stuck beside me by the same group that I don't want, but I'm stuck with it because I couldn't make the meeting to back it. But this is what I'm saying. And the runoff of the side of this, like these gentlemen were talking about, that's supposed to be wetlands. And the runoff of their chemicals of grass fertilizer and everything else into that pond and everything is going to kill everything over there. So it's up to you people, up to you, sir, and the whole group to come up with a decision. Okay. Thank you.
All right, sir. Thank you. Mr. Hutt, would you like to respond to the entrance question? It's a good question.
I'm going to actually defer. Mr. Boyce has arrived.
Okay.
He's our traffic expert. So I'll ask him to introduce himself to the Planning Commission, now that you don't know him already, and then answer the question. I believe you heard the question that was asked.
How ironic it is that Mr. Boyce was stuck in traffic.
There is some. And before he answers that question, because I'll just sit down and let him answer the question.
Okay.
Certainly, it sounds like it would be, based on the comments we've heard, it would be appropriate to have a hunting notice, similar to the agricultural use protection notice, and I know that the commission has required that before when a property is developed adjacent to that.
And we certainly would, if this were approved, we most definitely would require a notice at a minimum.
Boyce?
So Drew Boyce with Century Engineering. We've been engaged by the applicant to work them through the DelDOT process of required road improvements associated with the proposal. And so as part of that due diligence effort, we did come up with some conceptual designs associated with the entrance and the road widenings that are in DelDOT's regulation. And so those preliminary designs did indicate the need for some property rights outside of the applicant's control. And so typically how DLDOT handles that process is that a good faith effort needs to happen as part of trying to secure the necessary right-of-way needed for the improvements. So DLDOT requires, initial contact with the property owner, then an appraisal, a good faith offer, a good faith negotiation. If in fact those negotiations fail to come to conclusion, obviously the applicant doesn't have any powers of eminent domain like DLDOT does to be able to secure the property. And so so typically then it's back to DLDOT for a kind of renegotiation of those required frontage improvements. So we would look to minimize the design, narrow things up as much as we can to pull ourselves off of any properties that are not willing to provide any additional right-of-way needed for the improvements.
Yeah. All right, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Okay, anyone else like to speak in opposition? Okay, anyone on the commission have any further questions? Okay, there being none, we'll close the public hearing. We'll invite you to remain with us for the rest of the evening to see if we make a decision or you may wish to call the office in the morning.